This is the UCLA Mindful Monday Meditation. Each week, Marvin G. Belzer, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, leads a 30-minute guided session offering a variety of themes and practices to cultivate self-awareness, emotion regulation, and increased well-being. Thanks for joining us.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Monday meditation. Good to be with you here. Good to have Serena joining us today from UCLA Mindful staff. Keep an eye on things. If you're new to meditation, I think you're in the right place. I feel confident about teaching the basics of mindfulness meditation. I love doing it. The basics are amazingly simple. There are misconceptions about what we need to do to meditate properly, such as one example, my pet peeve, perhaps the idea that we have to somehow manipulate our minds in any way at all, including trying to stop our thoughts. No, we don't need to do that. We use natural capacities that we already have, such as the ability to decide where to place attention. We do it in an odd way because we ask ourselves to focus on elements of experience that are not terribly important, that are not naturally calling our attention in the midst of the things that we do. The reason we do this is focusing on the feel of the breath, for instance, keeping that in mind over a period of time, the mind naturally settles into a more tranquil, stable, clear states. It's quite extraordinary that this works. And most forms of meditation, not all, but most begin this way, one way or another. As we do this, it is doable. Let me convey that confidence again. It is doable, and it takes some effort, but it's mostly patience. And it also is useful to keep in mind that try as we might, the attention will drift. And at some point, all of us will realize, oh, I was trying to stay with the breath, but now I'm daydreaming. I've been daydreaming for a while. It's very interesting, actually. And it is good to remember this is our intelligence at work. Even when it's daydreaming, that can be intelligent at times. And so what we do is we recognize what's happening. We learn not to kind of label ourselves as failures because we lost track of the breath. We recognize thinking, planning, worrying, whatever. And then we come back to the breath or wherever we are trying to focus. So there's that natural oscillation of focusing somewhere, really trying to do it, but then recognizing that the attention has drifted, including whatever it is, even when we wish it weren't happening. But not even here, not trying to manipulate so much as just recognize and then bringing the attention back. So that's the kind of the general framework. And let's go ahead. So eyes can be open or closed. Might take a few deeper breaths as we begin, slightly deeper in breath and out breath. Yeah, maybe even a little sigh with the out breath. So just one way to begin. Letting the breath be normal now. We'll come back to the normal breath in a minute. For now, just notice the sounds you can hear. Whatever is happening in your environment. Don't try to hear everything. Don't try to get something out of the sensations. Just this simple act, which we can decide to do, turning our attention to this part of our experience. And then moment after moment, noticing some of what's happening in this area of what we can hear. It doesn't mean we've stopped other things. We might hear a lot and we might not even hear that much. Doesn't matter. Just this focusing, sustaining attention in this way. It's weird because it's almost like the biggest job is not trying to make something happen. And with so much of our daily activities, we are trying to get something to happen or trying to fix something or figure it out or whatever. So it's an unusual activity, but it is doable. So you can stay with sounds if you wish, come back to sounds whenever you wish to. It's also good to practice with sensations in our bodies. So when you wish, letting your attention settle into your body. Noticing what there is to notice now. So we've shifted our frame from sounds to physical sensations, head, shoulders, arms, hands, torso, legs, and feet. Again, we might notice a lot, we might not notice much. Doesn't matter. Just this tuning in, focusing, vibration, pressure, softness, and so forth. As we feel into our bodies, it can be natural to notice sensations connected with the normal breath. The abdomen area, slight rising, tensing as the in-breath begins. Sort of falling, softening, dissolving as the out-breath begins and unfolds. So just a slight movement. Is enough, just noticing when the in-breath begins, when the out-breath begins, based on sensations in the abdomen, the chest. We can also notice sensations at the opening of the nose, the upper lip, as air flows in, as air flows out of our bodies. So choose one of these areas, abdomen, chest, or nose, just knowing when the normal breath begins. When the normal out-breath begins, we're not trying to extract something from the sensations or get something to happen. It's interesting how that can be a challenge, right? So it is easier than that. It does take a sort of willingness not to know what's going to happen. It is an unusual activity, so we kind of almost enjoy that. We can enjoy that. And then, of course, our minds will still want to be active. It's their job of our minds to keep track. What am I supposed to be doing now? Quite naturally, we will notice the attention drift has been pulled away, and one thought leads to another fast. This also is interesting. So whatever has come to mind, we take it in. We don't have to be in a hurry. We do want to avoid just kind of losing track of what we're doing, but all the same, we'll remember. So we take in, notice worry. What is it like to be worrying? So thoughts, there are sensations in our bodies that are part of emotions. And so we notice. What is, we're real. We just have that opportunity to be real without any further kind of work to do, just noticing. And then, yeah, bring the attention back. Maybe the next in-breath you can connect with, just noticing the movement and the sensations in our bodies. So there is something to do. It's definitely a method that's time-tested. But it's also a free space to be alive, to appreciate what's real, even when we might wish it were different. Always with that option of just coming back to the simplicity of the breath. If the breath doesn't feel quite right, can use sounds or sensations elsewhere in our bodies as the home base for attention. So yeah, I'll Be quiet for a bit. Let's practice together. So we'll take a few more minutes for this meditation together. There is another approach to meditation that goes well with the basics of mindfulness. And this is a practice of loving kindness or kindness. They go together really well, even though it's a different approach where we, and so if you wish, you can shift. If you don't wish, just stay with what you're doing. But if you want to, you can bring to mind somebody who you find it easy to appreciate. Can be anyone. It's not we're supposed to appreciate, but just who we do appreciate. No one's coming to mind, no rush. Several come to mind, just choosing one. Notice why they come to mind in response to this prompt. You might have a visual image of them. A memory of having seen them, or as if looking at a photograph. So we use our minds, we use thoughts and images. Kind of the core of this type of meditation is appreciating the goodness in someone, then letting that appreciation have its effect in us. So we choose someone to begin. We choose someone with whom, for whom we find it easy to appreciate. So we can reflect on their friendship, their loyalty, their kindness, humor, whatever. It's still a free space, this sort of structure. Holding them in mind, we might use some phrases to wish them well. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be safe. So we just take another 30 seconds for this, oh, then I'll ring a bell. So thank you. It's good to practice with you. The basics are indeed quite simple. It doesn't mean it's easy to do, but it's that sense that it should be more complicated is something we get used to ignoring as we practice. That being said, there are different ways to work with this simplicity, and at times it can be useful to do the kindness meditation, not only because it can be very enjoyable to do, and it can be helpful in its own right, but it also can be useful during times when we notice our minds are racing with a lot of thoughts, right? So we still don't fight the thoughts directly or try to squelch them. But we can replace kind of if we notice, wait a minute, I'm just going through the same old story here. And yeah, he's saying it's okay and we don't have to manipulate our minds here. But nonetheless, I'm getting tired of this story and I'm really having trouble staying with the breath. Shift the topic. And a great way to shift the topic is to do this sort of kindness practice where we engage our thinking and our visual imagery with something pleasant and enjoyable that also can help us become more concentrated in addition to kind of cultivating these more enjoyable emotions. So there's more to say about that, but it is it's and lo and behold, you may find that even doing a few minutes of it, it's like, wait, this is good for me. This and so it may become something that you do on your own. If you do that, give yourselves a few minutes, maybe the beginning or the end of just not working so hard, just because we're engaging our thoughts, and so it can feel like a lot of effort, and it does take a little more effort than just staying with the breath. So it can be nice to do both and just kind of get the feel of not doing so much, but nonetheless, they go together really well. And I also wanted to just mention today, I think I mentioned this maybe last summer. There was a Bob Builder died last August. Some of you who are on campus or may not have even known that he had a bout with cancer that came in pretty suddenly. And he is without him, these Monday sessions probably would not be taking place. He was a neuroscientist, but with a very broad range of interests. And I met him when I came to UCLA in 2010. He w was active in the Department of Psychiatry and Biobehavioral Sciences. When I came to UCLA, I came from Bowling Green State, where I was teaching philosophy, but I had started an undergrad course in meditation there in 1998. So I had this course that had worked pretty well there. And he heard about that, and he said that he had been thinking about starting an undergrad course in the psychiatry department, and he suggested that we both develop our courses and package them together. His course was called Personal Brain Management, and so in 2011 or 12, we started teaching the courses together in the summer, and he was behind the scenes. He was very active in the Semmel Institute for Neuroscience. And when I say that that these Monday sessions might well not be happening, but for him, so much of the work that Diana Winston and I have done was facilitated by him in behind the scenes to make the Mindful Awareness Research Center, UCLA Mindful, a real entity as part of the Semmel Institute and UCLA Health. So last week there was a great celebration of his life with a number of scientists with whom he worked on schizophrenia, on developing ways of thinking about how to bring mental health more squarely into like physical examinations, so and so forth. So I can't do justice to his work as a scientist. I once went to a talk he gave where he was talking about data mining neuroscience articles, and so he was showing images of MRIs, but they weren't actual MRIs. They were MRIs images constructed from data mining hundreds of neuroscience. And I was like, whoa, that's interesting. So Bob Builder, it was really great to realize that I wasn't the only one, to say the least, who deeply appreciated his impact, his intelligence, and his love. Really great man. So cheers to you, Bob. Thank you for your attention. His death came as a big surprise to me. He got cancer and it spread rapidly. And it is a reminder, isn't it? And this is a part of, we don't preach this so much, but there is something about mindfulness practice which not only can help us develop more calmness and clarity and stability, but it also can give us insights into sort of realities of our lives that we prefer not to think about, but when we do think about them and reflect, then it actually makes life more meaningful. And Bob was always a very honest guy. And just one more thing comes to mind. I didn't trust him when I first met him, because I knew of him. I knew he was a respected neuroscientist and had a powerful role in the Semmel Institute for Neuroscience and Department of Psychiatry. And he was weirdly enthusiastic about the work that Diana and I were endeavoring to do. And he was too enthusiastic, It's like, wait a minute, what's really going on here? He was so open-minded, and honestly, I don't know for sure what his views were about it, but he was, and this in the talks and reflections last week, this was a common theme that graduate students or medical students would come to him with ideas, and he would be like, "Yes, let's look into that," I mean, my skepticism changed rapidly given his enthusiasm about the course I had to offer, which basically is, teaching the undergraduates the same thing every class, the same way I do here every Monday. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mark, for your comment. Sorry for your loss. Thank you all for your practice. Good to be with you. And thanks, Serena, for coming. And see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Monday Meditation. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.